Shalom and welcome to Rambam Yomi. This is Rabbi Mati Novik. Join me as we learn the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, one perek each day. Today we'll be learning Hilchot Ishut Perek Yud Aleph. In the last perek, we learned about the institution of the ketubah, its source and purpose, and the exact sum which the husband is obligated to commit to his wife in this document, at minimum 200 zuz if she's a betula and 100 zuz if she's a be'ula. We'll see much more about the ketubah throughout the remainder of Hilchot Ishut, but our parak discusses two ketubah topics which are relevant to the beginning of the Nisuin period. The topic of the first third of the parak is a list of unusual situations in which the ketubah is less than we would expect, either 100 zuz, even though the wife is not a be'ula, or at least not known to be one, or exceptional cases in which there is no ketubah at all. The last two-thirds of the perek are devoted to a discussion of Tanat Betulim, a claim by the husband on the day after the Nisuin that his wife, to whom he wrote a ketubah of 200 zuz on the assumption that she was a betula, turned out not to have been a betula at all, and therefore she should be penalized and lose her ketubah altogether. Halacha Aleph. Hanosei betula shnit almana o nitgarsha o nechlitza, Imina erusinit almana onikarsha onechletza ktubatamatayim vimananesuin ktubatameya shemishnis eit harehi kivula. If a woman has already been married but is still a betula after that marriage ends through divorce or the death of her husband, she does not automatically get a ktuba of 200 zuz when she enters into a second marriage. It depends if her first marriage ended when she was still an arusa, in which case her second ketubah is 200 zuz, or only after nisuin, in which case her second ketubah is only 100 zuz. The chiddush here is that even though she is still a betula, because her first marriage was never consummated in an act of bia after nisuin, the very fact that she was nisua makes her the equivalent of a be'ula for ketubah purposes. V'chein hanosei betula meshuchreret o giyoret o shvuya, im nishtachra ha-shivcha v'nitgaira ha-goya v'nifdeit ha-shvuya, v'hein p'chutot mishalosh shanim v'yom echad, k'tubatan matayim, v'im hayu benot shalosh shanim v'yom echad v'mala, k'tubatan meya. If a betula is a former shivcha Kenanit who was freed, or a former non-Jew who converted, or a former captive who was released from captivity, then the value of her ketubah depends on her age at the time of the transition, her freedom from servitude, her conversion to Judaism, or her release from captivity. If this happened below age 3, then her ketubah is 200 zuz. But if it was at age 3 or above, then her ketubah is 100 zuz. Halacha Bet explains the reason for the distinction in these cases between after and before the age of 3, and the distinction in the earlier case between Arusa and Nesua. There are certain categories of women about whom we simply have a chazaka, a presumption that they are be'ulot, and therefore Chazal included in their takan of ketubah that all women in these categories have a ketubah of 100 zuz, even the individuals among them who happen to be betulot. A nesua is presumed to be a be'ula, as is any shivcha Kenanit, any non-Jewish woman, and any captive woman. Therefore, a woman belonging to any of these four categories has a ketubah of 100 zuz. For the last three, why is it critical that the transition be at age 3 or older? The Rambam explains in Halacha Gimel. Any girl who engages in bia below age 3 becomes a betula again when she reaches age 3 because her betulim grow back. The betulim is the hymen, a piece of tissue which is torn during a woman's first act of bia, causing bleeding known as dam betulim. After age 3, though, betulim which are torn do not grow back, and so a woman who ceases only at that age to be a shivcha, a non-Jew or a captive, is considered a beula. Halacha Gimel. Mukat eitz ktubata meya. Afilu nisa'a amnachi betula shlema, v'nimitzet mukat eitz ktubata meya. A mukat eitz is a woman who loses her betulim due to injury or physical trauma. She too has a ketubah of only 100 zuz, like a be'ula, because she lacks betulim, even though this is not due to an act of bia. We'll see later that if a man marries a woman on the assumption that she is a betula, and she turns out to be a be'ula, then she can lose her entire ketubah. However, if she turns out to be a mukat eitz, then she still has a ketubah, but only 100 zuz and not 200. Halacha Dalet. Betula shi bogeret o suma o ilonit, ktubatan matayim, avala chareshet vashota, lo tiknu lahem chachamim ktuba. Hashota, lo tiknu la nisuin klal, vachareshet, afa pishi yeshla nisuin midivrehem, lo tiknu la ktuba, kidesh lo yimanu, velo yisuota. Uchishem shein la ktuba, kach ein la mizonot, velo tnai mitnae ktuba. Vim knasa chereshet, mnit pakha, yesh la ktuba, utnae ktuba, uktubata mea. The ketubah of a betula is 200 zuz even if she is blind or if she is an ilonit, incapable of having children, assuming the husband knew this in advance. We'll see later in Perek Chaf Daled that if the husband didn't realize before marrying her that she was an ilonit, then she loses her entire ketubah. If a woman is a shota, she cannot be married at all, as we saw back in Perek Daled. A chereshet can be married midirabanan, but she has no ketubah, nor does her husband have to provide her with mizonot, as a husband generally does. The reason for these exemptions is to provide an incentive for someone to marry her. A typical man is disinclined to marry a chereshet, and the added financial burden would dissuade him from doing so. However, if during her marriage a chereshet gains the ability to hear and speak, and thereby becomes a pikachat, then at that point the husband must provide her with mizonot, and she has a ketubah of 100 zuz, because by that point she is a be'ula. Halachah adds that a husband who wishes to may write a ketubah even for his chereshet wife. Halachah Vav. Cheresh o shoteh shenasu nashim pikchot, af al pi shenipakach hacheresh nishtapa shoteh, ein lin shehem alehem klum. Ratzu lekayman achar sheivriu, yesh lehem ketubah mea. Vim beitin hein shehisiu acheresh, vekatvu la ketubah al nechasav, notel koma shekatvu la beitin. In a similar manner, a cheresh and even a shoteh can marry a woman midirabanan, but in each case, his wife gets no ketubah, because the husband lacks the dat to take upon himself a binding financial commitment. The two exceptional cases are again if the cheresh or shoteh becomes a pikeach over the course of the marriage, in which case he writes his wife a ketubah of 100 zuz, because she is already a bu'ula by that point. Or if beitin were the ones to set up the marriage as an arrangement beneficial to both sides, in which case they also write the wife a ketubah on some of her husband's property. The rest of this halacha explains that even though Chazal established a form of marriage for a cheresh and a shote, they didn't do the same for a katan, because he can simply wait to marry until he reaches adulthood. Halacha Zayin adds that if a katan nonetheless enters into a non-halachic marriage, then his wife has no ketubah. Though, if they remain together until he becomes a gadol, and the marriage gains halachic validity, then she gets a ketubah of 100 zuz, like in the previous cases we've seen. If a non-Jew and his wife convert together, then she too gets a ketubah of 100 zuz. Halacha chet. Kol betula shektubata matayim, yesh la tanat betulim. V'chol shektubata maneh, o shelo tiknu la chachamim ketubah, ein la tanat betulim. V'mityachet im arusato kodem yisuin, ein lo tanat betulim. We now begin the second and longer topic of this perek, the rules which govern tanat betulim. This is the case of a man who marries a woman with a justified assumption that she is a betula, and therefore he wrote her a ketubah of 200 zuz. But he then claims after the first night of marriage that she was not in fact a betula, and therefore she should lose her ketubah. Even though a be'ula still gets a ketubah of 100 zuz, this is only when the husband knows from the start that she is a be'ula. If he was misled into thinking that she was a betula, then she loses the entire amount. Any woman whose ketubah is only 100 zuz cannot be subject to tanat betulim, because the assumption coming into the marriage was that she was already a be'ula, or, as in the examples from the beginning of this parak, like the giyoret and the shivuya, that she belongs to some category of women, who in general are be'ulot. Any man who was secluded with his wife, yichud, at any point during the period of erusin, cannot claim tanat betulim, because it is entirely possible that he himself had beer with her before the nisuin. Halacha yud. Hanosei betula, shiktubata matayim, v'ta'an v'amar, lo mitzatia betula, shualin ota, imamra emetu omer, lo mitzani betula, mipnei shenafalti v'hikani eitz, o karka, v'alchu betulai, harezo nemenet, v'tachzor ktubata lemaneh. אף על פי שהוא טוען ואומר שמא איש בעלייך ואין לך כלום, אין משכיחין בטענתו, ויש לו להחרים סתם שלא בא עליה איש שאין הדבר לא ודאי. The Perek now goes through the different possible claims that can be made by the wife against her husband's Tanat Betulim. If her response to his claim is that she indeed is not a Betula because she suffered injury and is a Mukat Eitz, then she is believed, and her ketubah goes down to 100 zuz like for any Mukat Eitz. If the husband suggests that she is lying, and in fact she has no Betulim because a man had beer with her, in which case, as we explained, she loses her entire ketubah, then we might expect Beit Din to require her to take a Shavua to back up her claim that she is in fact a Mukat Eitz. But she does not need to take a Shavua here, because while her claim is a Ta'anat Bari, a claim with basis of certainty, she has reason to know why she lost her Betulim, the claim made by her husband is only a Ta'anat Shema. Maybe a man had beer with her, but he has no way to know this for a fact. We have a rule of Bari Veshema, Bari Adif. A Ta'anat Bari wins out over a Ta'anat Shema. But it is debated in the Gemara whether this by itself is enough to grant her Ne'emanut without any need for a Shavua. But the Gemara points out that the wife also has a migo. This means that she could have made a better claim than the one she did, and therefore is believed automatically in the worst claim that she makes. The better claim she could have made is that she only became a Mukat Eitz after the Kiddushin, in which case she deserves the full 200 zuz of the ketubah, because she was a regular betula at the moment of the Kiddushin. The combination of Bar Veshema and amigo allows Beit Din to believe the woman with no need for a Shavua. There is a Takanat HaGeonim, that one who has a losing Ta'anat Shema can issue a general cherem, a curse against anyone who makes a false claim against him, without naming anyone in particular. So in this case, the husband can proclaim a cherem against his wife in the event that she is lying and is really a be'ula. Halacha Yud Aleph. Amra hin emet amar shelo mitzani betula, v'ish ba'alai ba'ones achar shnit arasti lo, harei zo nemenet, uchtubata matayim kamot shahita. V'im ta'an v'amar, shema ad shelo erastich ne'anast, u'mikhi mekach ta'ut, o achar shirastich niv'alt birtzonech, harei ze macharim stam al mi she'to'ein sheker, k'dei l'chayveni mamon she'eini chayav bo. If she admits that she is not a betula, but claims the reason is that she was raped after the Erusin, she is believed, and her ketubah remains the full 200 zuz. Here, he has two potential claims against her. One, maybe she was in fact raped as she says, but really it was before the Erusin, in which case the entire marriage was a mekach ta'ut, a mistaken transaction, which is automatically null and void, because he was mekadesher, assuming her to be a betula. Two, maybe she was not the victim of rape at all, but rather willingly had bia with another man after the Erusin, in which case she committed adultery and loses her ketubah completely, as we'll see later in Perek Chaf Dalet. But again, both of these claims are ta'anot shema and do not stand up to her tana bari. And here too she has a migo. She could have claimed that she was a mukat eitz, like in the last halacha, in which case she would still be permitted to a kohen, which is not the case now that she claims to have been raped after kiddushin. Since she had a better claim to make, but opted for a worse claim, she is believed, based on the concept of migo. The question arises, though, both in this case and the last one, that despite her stronger claim, the husband also has an advantage in this case, in the form of chezkat mamon. The money she is claiming, the ketubah, is his money, which he should not have to part with unless it can be proven that he owes it to her. Hamotzi mechavaro alav haraya. The Gemara explains that aside from his chezkat mamon, there is another chazaka at work here, namely her chezkat haguf. She was born a betula, and so in the lack of proof to the contrary, we assume that she remained a betula until the last possible moment, that is, after the Erusin, as she claims, not before the Erusin, as he suggests may be the case. And if she claims to be a mukat eitz, then by her claim, she is still a betula even now. And as for a suggestion that she willingly committed adultery, this violates her chezkat kashrut, the presumption that, absent evidence to the contrary, no Jew is a sinner. Halacha Yud Bet. Ta'an v'amar lo mitzatiya betula, v'yomeret lo ba'alai, v'adayin betulani, bodkinota, o chozer uvoel bifnei edim. What if she doesn't admit at all to his finding that she isn't a betula, as she did in the last two halachot, but rather insists that she is in fact a betula? The first way this can happen is if she flatly denies that she and her husband even had relations at all. In this case, the matter is easily resolved. Either she can be checked by a doctor to determine if she is a Betula, or they can have relations together with a piece of cloth to collect any blood which would indicate the presence of Betulim. The phrase Choser Ubo El Bifnei Edim doesn't literally mean that the act of Bia is performed in front of witnesses, but rather that witnesses prepare the cloth and stand outside the room in which the husband and wife are secluded together. Continuing in Halacha Yud Bet, Amra ba'alai uftula mitza'ani kechol ha-betulot v'sheker hu toein, sholin oto, v'omrin lo, mahi adavar ad sh'amarta she'ina betula? Im amar mipnei shelo matzati dam, bodkin b'mishpachta, shema ein lehen dam klal, lo dam nida v'lo dam betulim. Im imtzu kulan kein, harei zo kechezkata. The second way for her to contradict the husband's tanat betulim is to insist that he is lying. They had relations together, and she was indeed a betula. In this case, we go back to the husband to clarify why he claims that she was not a betula. And there are two possible answers he can give. The first is that there was no dam betulim, the blood that typically accompanies a woman's first act of bia. If this is his claim, then we check her family history. It's possible that she comes from a family in which, due to some genetic anomaly, the women have no dam betulim. In this case, we accept her claim, and she still has rights to her ketubah. Continuing in Halach Yud Bet, Lo nimtzu b'nei mishpachta kein, bodkinota, shema choli gadol yeshba, sheibesh lachluchita ivarim, o shema hayta mit'ana bara'av, umradvinota, umachilinota, umashkinota, ad shetavri, v'tiba el shnia, v'nireh im totzi dam im lav, v'im ein sham choli, v'lo ra'av, v'lo chayotzebo, harei zo tanat betulim. If there is no genetic reason for her not to have dam betulim, we check if she is sick or dehydrated, because these are also possible reasons why there would be no dam betulim. If one of these is indeed the case, then we provide her with food and drink and wait until she is restored to proper health. At that point, the husband and wife can engage in relations a second time, and we check if there was any dam betulim. If even after this there is no blood, or if she was not sick or dehydrated in the first place, then we have no choice but to accept the husband's claim that his wife was not a betula, and therefore she loses the entire 200 zuz. The halacha ends, by way of explanation, with the assertion that every betula should have dam betulim, in the absence of the genetic or medical factors we discussed, even a bogeret. This is in contrast to the view of certain geonim, which we will see in Halacha Gimel. Continuing a little later in Halacha Yud Bet, V'im amar mipnei shelo matzati dochak, ela petach patuach matzati, shoalin al shnoteha, shema bogereti, sherov habogrot, ein lehen dochak, shemargishin bo harbe, sherei gadla v'nitrapu evareha, v'chalu betuleha. Even if there was dam betulim, there is a second reason the husband can give for his claim that she is not a betula, and that is petach patuach matzati. Usually, the man's sensation during a woman's first act of bia is one of tightness and constriction. But the husband had no such sensation in this case, indicating that his wife had engaged in bia before. The Ramah writes that this claim is only accepted from a man who was previously married, as otherwise we have no reason to consider him sufficiently experienced in the act of bia to be able to make this kind of judgment. But this claim is only relevant when the wife is still a na'ara, because by the time she becomes a bogeret, her body has developed to the point where the sensation of petach patuach exists even during her first act of bia. If she is a na'ara, and the husband is sure that his sensation was one of petach patuach, then here too his claim is accepted, and she loses her ketubah. The Magen Mishnah quotes the opinion of the Ramban and the Rashba, who disagree with the Rambam about when a claim of Petach Patuach Matzati is accepted. The Rambam believes this claim has validity even when there was Dam Betulim, because the Petach Patuach by itself proves that there were no Betulim, and we assume the blood must have come from somewhere else. The Ramban and the Rashba believe that if there was any blood at all, there can never be Tanat Betulim. The only relevance of the Tanat Petach Patuach Matzati is in a situation where the bedsheet was lost, and there is no way to establish whether or not there was Dam Betulim at all. Halacha Yud Gimel. Yesh Geonim Shehoru Shabogeret Ein La Tanat Damim V'yesh La Tanat Petach Patuach V'ein Derech HaTalmud Mar'ad Davar Ze V'ta'ut Hayta B'Nuschaot Shelahem U'chvar Badakti Al Sfarim Rabim V'Kadmonim U'Matzati Shadavar Kamo Shamarnu She'ein La Bogeret Ela Tanat Damim Bilvad. In the last halacha, the Rambam wrote that if a woman is a bogeret and ostensibly a betula, then she should still have dam betulim. Hence, the husband can make a claim against her if there was no dam betulim, even though he cannot make the claim against her of petach patuach matzati. There were gaonim who ruled just the opposite. A husband can claim petach patuach matzati against his bogeret wife, but he cannot claim against her that he didn't find any dam betulim, because it frequently happens that a woman who has reached the age of bagrut has no dam betulim. In a rare reference to Talmudic manuscripts in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam testifies that he looked into this matter and is convinced that these gaonim were working with an incorrect version of the Talmudic text. The authoritative version of this text, claims the Rambam, supports his own opinion that a bogeret has dam betulim, and so the husband can make the claim against her that there was no dam betulim. However, he cannot make the claim against her that petach patuach matzati. Halacha Yudalid. Chachamim heim shetiknu ikar ktuba laisha, venitkinu vamru shekola toein tanat betulim vaisha makeshet oto neman, ve'ale lavi raya, lo ala ish. Shechazakahi she'ein adam torech bisuda u'mafsida v'ofech simchato le'evel. In the cases in Halacha Yud Bet, where the claims of husband and wife contradict each other, he claims that she wasn't a betula, and she claims that she was. Why is it that the husband's claim is accepted? If there was no dam betulim, why do we not accept some other explanation for this, aside from genetics, sickness, or dehydration? And if he claims petach patuach matzati, for which he obviously has no proof, why do we listen to him at all? The answer goes back to the fact that ketubah is a rabbinic institution in the first place, at least in its 200 zuz manifestation, as we discussed in the last perek. As part of the takana of the ketubah, Chazal built in the presumption that a husband who makes a valid tanat betulim is telling the truth, until his wife can prove otherwise. The reason for this presumption is ein adam toreach bisuda u'mafsida. After spending a large sum of money on the wedding meal, the husband has no interest in seeing all that money go to waste. He would not have spent that money in the first place if he was planning to make an unfounded tanat betulim. Therefore, if he is making a claim now, he must have a solid basis for it. Just as the husband can issue a blanket cheirim without mentioning his wife by name, back in the cases of Halachot Yud and Yud Aleph, where his wife is believed, so too she can make a cheirim here against anyone who raises a false claim against her. As the Magen Mishnah points out in the name of the Rashba, in the absence of the presumption of Ein Adam Torech Bisuda Mafsida, the Chezkat Mamon of the husband would not be enough to let him keep his money as long as there is any doubt that his wife was really a betula. This is because, as we explained in a different case back in Halacha Yud Aleph, his Chezkat Mamon is counterbalanced by her Chezkat Aguf. Since she was originally a betula, we assume that she remains so until we are sure that this changed. Halacha Tet Zayin. Horu kol ha-geonim, shezeh she'amru chachamim, shehu ne'eman, im hikhishato, lafsida ikar ktuba, aval ha-tosefet yeshla. Ela im kein noda biraya brua shaita beula, o shehudat lo shi beula kodem shetitares vitato. Lefichach, yesh lo lehashpia bin kitat chifetz kidin kol hanishba'im menotlin, v'achar kach tigbe hatosefet. The Rambam quotes the Gaonim a second time in this perek, but this time approvingly. When we say that the husband is believed in his tanat betulim to keep the entire sum of the ketubah, this refers only to the ikar ketubah of 200 zuz. This is what Chazal included in their takana of ketubah, and it was only to this that they attached their presumption of believability based on ein adam torech bisuda u'mafsida. But if the husband added to this a tosefet ketubah, then he does not get out of that obligation to her without hard proof or an admission on her part that she was not a betula when he was mekadesher. If they divorce and she wishes to collect her tosefet ketubah, he may insist that she take a shvua in Beit Din before doing so. Halacha Yud Zayin. Harei sheratza lekaima achar shifsida ikar ketubah, chozer v'chotev lameah. L'fi she'asur l'adam lishot im ishto sha achat below ketubah, kamo shebiyardu. If despite the successful tanat betulim, which canceled the entire ikar ketubah, the husband wishes to remain married to his wife, then he must write her a new ketubah of 100 zuz. As we learned in the last perek, it is forbidden for husband and wife to remain married for even a short time in the absence of a ketubah. The Shulchan Aruch and the Rama point out that it is not always the case that Beit Din will allow the husband and wife to continue living together at all. If the result of the back-and-forth claims about her betulim is a strong suspicion that she committed adultery, then she is forbidden to her husband. And if he is a Kohen, then she is forbidden to him even if she was raped after the Kiddushin, as we'll learn in Hilchot Issurei Bia. However, the Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch note that because the custom nowadays, and for many hundreds of years, has been for Kiddushin to take place at the same time as Nisuin under the Chuppah, rather than months or years in advance, as was done earlier, there no longer exists, under any circumstances, any realistic concern that she only became a Be'ula after Kiddushin. Therefore, if she is found after the marriage not to be a Betula, it is clear that this was the situation before Kiddushin. And even if she loses her Iker Ketubah, based on the rules laid down in this Perek, she and her husband may remain married. Thank you for joining me in learning today's Perek of the Mishnah Torah. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas you'd like to share, I'd be happy to hear from you. Send me an email at mtorahyomi@gmail.com. That's M as in Mishnah, Torah, T-O-R-A-H, Yomi, Y-O-M-I, @gmail.com. Come back tomorrow as we continue with our next parak.